ओम ज्ञानति मिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. Thereafter he began to offer prayers to the three deities who were seated on different carriers, a bull, a swan and Garuda, and who held in their hands a drum, kusha grass and a discus. The sage offered them his respects by falling down like a stick. Purport. Danda means a long rod and vat means like. Before a superior one has to fall down on the ground just like a stick, and this sort of offering of respect is called dandavat. Atri Rishi offered his respect to the three deities in that way. They were identified by their different carriers and different symbolic representations. In that connection, it is stated here that Lord Vishnu was sitting on Garuda, a big aquiline bird, and was carrying in his hand a disc. Brahma was sitting on a swan and had in his hand kush grass. And Lord Shiva was sitting on a bull and carrying in his hand a small drum called a damru. Atri Rishi recognized them by their symbolic representations and different carriers, and thus he offered them prayers and respects. Atri Rishi prayed for the Supreme to become his son, but he wasn't quite sure who the Supreme was. So the Supreme Lord has appeared before him in his three guna avatars, who are, when they're referred to together, even today in modern Hinduism we often hear it said Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, who are the overseers of Rajagun, Sattagun and Tamagun respectively, and of Srishti, Stiti, Pralay, the creation, maintenance and destruction of the material universe. With the proliferation of printed matter, pictures of these deities, especially Vishnu and Mahesh, has taken place. We don't see many pictures of Lord Brahma, but often we see on calendars, in people's houses, pictures of Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. Actually, Mahesh means Vishnu also, but the name is commonly associated with Lord Shiva. Tamishvaranam paramam Maheshvaram. This is from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. So, some people are of the opinion that the Shvetashvatara Upanishad is in praise of Lord Shiva. Tamishvaran, Ishvara. Generally, the word Ishvara, if it's not further qualified, is presumed to refer to Lord Shiva rather than Lord Vishnu. Maheshwar is Mahesh, Maheshwar is presumed to, Parameshwar is presumed to refer to Lord Shiva in general usage among Hindus. It's not incorrect to say that he is Ishvara. And it's not incorrect even to say that he is Maheshwara or Parameshwara. Param means supreme. So how is he the supreme controller when Lord Vishnu is above him? He's Param, but in Sanskrit there are even there are, what's the word, intensifiers or paramataram, supreme, more supreme, and holy supreme. So Parameshwar means he may be considered the supreme controller within the material universe, within a certain sphere. He has no jurisdiction of controlling beyond the material sphere. He is also controlled by Lord Vishnu, or he accepts subordination to Lord Vishnu. So we'll see, we'll see pictures of Vishnu, Mahesh. A generation ago, in every Hindu home, you would find the walls were covered with pictures of various gods. Isn't it? Ananda Mahaprabhu, remember? You could see, just by entering a home, what is a person's religious, what kind of worship he does. Usually all mixed up, and some local gods. Actually, the pictures of Raina, they were block prints from about the 1920s. They were very common. They were being used up till that time. Often the pictures were quite old, so it'd be pictures of mostly reproduced, painted pictures. So there'd be pictures of so many different deities, and Vishnu and Mahesh especially are, and also Durga, immediately recognizable. These are the most common. Everyone, every Hindu can immediately understand. Just you don't need to put the writing underneath Vishnu, Bhagavan. They may do. They may or may not. So these three especially are very well known. Other demigods, not so much. Except in Tamil Nadu, Murugan, people recognize by seeing. Actually, you see many of the gods, they look the same, but then you recognize, as is stated here, according to their carrier, Vrishabh. Lord Shiva is carried on a bull by the name of... You don't know the name of the... Nandi. It's everyone's common thing. At the entrance to every Shiva temple, there's Nandi. And then Lord Brahma is recognized by his carrier, Hans. And Lord Vishnu by his carrier, Garuda. And all the gods have their carriers. Murugan, I was saying, Skanda, Kartikeya, Subramanyam, there are so many names. He rides on a... rides on a peacock. Ganga Devi rides on a crocodile, or it said Makara. No? It's not really a crocodile. It's something, what is it? It has the mouth of a crocodile and the body of something else. Ganesh is very famous for riding on a rat who helps him eat laddus. So like that, the gods, they're recognized by their characters, by their carriers, by their personal features. Lord Shiva, he's usually depicted as being blue in color, but actually according to Shastra, his form is white, and he's Neelakanta. His neck is blue, due to holding the poison, halahal poison, which was generated at the time of the churning of the milk ocean. So he's also recognized, generally they'll depict Lord Shiva with the tilak, which is, actually he may be white, he may be, that dark grey color may be from Maybe the idea is from putting the ashes from the crematorium, but this tilak, which is typical of him, this tripundra, which according to the Shaivites is very auspicious. According to Vaishnavas, if you wear that, you go to hell. So, that's banned. It's specifically stated by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. One should not wear horizontal tilak. One should wear urdhva pundram. Urdhva means upward facing. Sometimes we see our devotees, they put on the sides, it's neither horizontal nor vertical. There are many artistic devotees who have their own styles of applying tilak. But then if it's not urdhva, if it's not going straight up, then you might go up and, you know, get stuck in the heavenly planets. You're not going to go up. So better to have urdhva pundra. So Lord Shiva is here also is mentioned his damru. And damru, everyone knows, is a little drum like this. And that's very dangerous, because when that starts to play, it's time for Mahapralayam, for Tandav Nritya, his dance of destruction. He, by dancing, he destroys the universe. That's a very ferocious kind of dancing. Then another famous symbol of Lord Shiva, more famous than the Damru, is his Trishul. Yeah, also his Jata with the Ganga. He's Ganga Dhara, holding the Ganga. Just holds and then she comes down. Snakes. He's Fani Bhushan, decorated with snakes. So these are all the... You see Lord Shiva, right? Then you can immediately recognize. You don't have to put any word. This is Lord Shiva. Another common form, Vishnu. Of course, Vishnu in his various forms, Krishna, is also easily recognizable. There's Vasudev Krishna and Vraja Krishna. So the picture of Vraja Krishna with cow or with Radharani is very common. And also Lord Ram is in Hindu homes recognizable. Ram with, generally with Ram will be Sita Ram, Lakshman Hanuman, or the whole Ram Darba. They say, although I think Darbar is an Urdu word, actually. It's not a... They say Ram Darbar. There was someone in northern, in that Himalaya area, his name was Parosara. But Parosa, it's an Urdu word, isn't it? I don't think it's a Sanskrit word.
Parosa.
Yeah, I know. But I think it's an Urdu word. I don't think it's a soul. Anyway, like that.
Ram Bharosa.
Yeah, Bharosa Ram or Ram Bharosa, whatever. So, Hanuman also, by himself, is often depicted with holding the... Krishna is known as Giridhari. But another Giridhari is Hanuman. He's also famous for lifting a hill. So all these figures are instantly recognizable. At Trimuni he could recognize. They have come. Lord Brahma, not much. You don't see many pictures of Lord Brahma. That's due to the curse of... Who was that? He was cursed by... Saraswati, was it? Or Savitri? Wait. No, Bhrigu cursed the Brahmanas. He's a Brahmana. But that Pushkar that happened when, was it his first wife? Was it Saraswati or was it Gayatri? I can't remember then. He needed his, they were going to do a yagya. There may be more than one story why it's like that. So they were going to do a yagya, but his wife was spending too much time getting dressed. Husbands know about this. When there's a social function, and the time for beginning it was passing, so he took another wife quickly. And then when the first wife came, she cursed him. He won't be worshipped anywhere. So he's only worshipped at Pushkar and in Thailand. He's widely worshipped in Thailand. But within the Mool Bharat, that's Mahabharat, but within the original Bharat, you won't find worship of Lord Brahma. So Brahma is, he's coming on a swan and he has Kusha grass. Why does he have Kusha grass? Any idea? Any suggestions? Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. Brahmanas, they always need Kusha grass because they're performing yagyas, and you should always have Kusha grass for performing yagyas. Lord Vishnu is carrying a disc, Sudarshan Chakra. So that's, he's recognizable, Lord Vishnu, by his Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. Now these are all the forms of the various deities by which they're recognized. They all have meaning, they all have purpose. Durga also carries Trishul that symbolizes the, well, there are so many threes, but this specifically symbolizes the Sattva, Raja and Tamagun, and by which Durga, she stabs the demons. And by, and all, there's so many, three phases of time, the Srishti, Stiti, Pralay, this is the material condition. So, these are the recognizable forms of the various deities. When Prabhupada was preaching in New York City in 1966, he had this storefront, which was the first temple of ISKCON. And it was a rundown kind of place. Anyway, after he'd been lecturing there regularly for some time, some regular comers who were considering themselves more and more and more, they were considering themselves his followers, they decided to decorate the storefront and make it more like a temple. The two of them, at least, that was Keith and Howard, who are later to become Kirtanananda and Hayagriva, or maybe they'd already been initiated. They'd already been to India, so they had some idea of what a temple is like. Nowadays there are many mandirs in the Western countries. In those days there weren't any, because Orthodox Hindus thought that you can't have temples outside of India. Because as soon as you cross the ocean, you become contaminated. So you can't have any mandirs outside of India. The Prabhupada, he fully ignored that injunction and established temples, and now everyone's establishing temples. They objected so much to Prabhupada on various grounds when he came back to India. But then all the people who objected, including many of his godbrothers, or most of his godbrothers, you can't make these lectures into devotees, you can't initiate them, so on. So they're all doing the same thing now. So they all forgot their objections. So anyway, Prabhupada had this storefront, and This Kirtanananda and Hayagriva, they decided to decorate, but they didn't tell Swamiji, as they called him then. Hand on mouth, you should go and wash it without touching anything else in the meantime, which you immediately do. So that's why you're not supposed to cross the ocean, because Paschime alok shab murha anachar. In the West, people are all murha, fools, and anachar. They don't know sadachar. But now it's the same. In India also, people don't know. So that's why I guess it's okay to cross the ocean now. It doesn't make any difference. So they decorated it. They went to an Indian or Oriental import store where things from the Asia were imported. In those days it was considered something exotic to have things from Asia. Nowadays, exotic means... how do you define exotic? It's something from another culture which is curious and different and interesting and unconventional. So nowadays, you know, people fly around all over the place. You know, I meet a sannyasi godbrother, where have you come? Oh, I just came from Argentina or something. It's a normal thing. People just fly around all over the place. But in those days, there wasn't much going forth, back and forth between India and the West. Even in the early days of our movement, in the West, if a devotee came from India, he'd bring some trunk with some pictures, and everyone was very interested. It was all very different. It was very different to what we were used to. So they went to a store, and they got a Persian rug and some pictures of different... And then they brought Swamiji, and Swamiji was very happy to say, oh, very nice. It's some devotional service. You wanted to do some service. He was pleased that they wanted to decorate the temple of Krishna. But they realized that not all the pictures, they might not be all correct, because they knew that Swamiji wasn't just a smorgasbord or kind of Hindu. Smorgasbord means buffet, as they say in Indian English, or buffet, as they say in French or non-Indian English. That you just take whatever you like. Prabhupada was very specific, so they weren't sure if all the pictures were right, so they asked Swamiji, is this picture okay? They showed one by one, and they came to another one, and is this one? Oh yes, this is very nice. It was a picture of Hanuman. And then one of them asked that, Swamiji, who is he? Is he a cat? It's Hanuman. So it just demonstrates how ignorant, how far away from Vedic culture they were, that every child 5 years old in India, probably even the Muslims or the Christians, at least one generation ago, nowadays, in India, they might also ask, is it a cat? There are many, even maybe most Hindu homes, they don't have pictures of deities. So they don't know. But in India, that time, everyone, even a five-year-old, would immediately, seeing the picture, they'd know, Hanuman. But they didn't know anything. They're so far away from Vedic culture. They ask, is it a cat? So that incident for me in all of the Prabhupada Lilamrita captures what Prabhupada was doing in trying to teach Krishna consciousness to people who, even they were becoming devotees, they were following Prabhupada, but they're so ignorant. so far away from Vedic culture. So that also underscores how fortunate his birth in India. That at least previously, people were brought up with this. Even it was mixed up with deep Mayavad. But people knew, just by seeing, this is a form of Lord, this is Lord Shiva, this is Lord Vishnu, this is Krishna. And due to Mayavad, they may have all different and strange ideas. But at least, this is the form of Vishnu, yeah. They're just like Atri Muni, Dandavat. You should bow down. And even the Mayavadis, who philosophically were so much opposed to, but they respect Ganga. It may be a kind of very strange respect because they think that ultimately everything is all one. They don't, they want cow protection. That's very good. In the Western countries, I was just saying this the other day, they think cow protection's a joke. They're very concerned with dog protection. But cow protection, it's a joking term in English. Sacred cow. Sacred cow, it's become a, what would you say? What would you call that? An idiom? Not exactly an idiom. It's a standard, what's the word? Upama? What's the word? A metaphor. That if someone is attached to something which is stupid, they call it a sacred cow, just like the government may have some program they want to push through, but it's stupid. So in the newspaper they'll criticize sacred cow. So they say that because they think that the Hindu belief in sacred cows is something stupid. Why is it a cow? Cow is just something you eat. They're so barbaric. In my childhood, I remember, I must have been less than 10 years old, there was so much propaganda that there's drought and famine in Bihar. Although later when I went to Bihar, I asked them about the famine. They said, what famine? I think it was just an excuse to raise funds from people in the Western countries. Anyway, they showed a photograph of an old man looking very thin, as if he was about to die. Like, you know, lots of old men look like that because when you are old, you're often thin and, you know, you're about to die. So they portrayed him as if he was starving. And he was standing next to a cow. And they said, you should send money to our organization because we're not just feeding starving people, we're educating them. You see, this man's ready to die from starvation, but he won't kill the cow to eat it because he's so stupid. So we're educating people that they should kill the cow, so you should give us money. I mean, he didn't exactly put it like that, more sophisticatedly, but that's their propaganda. And so you see, like, you know, these Christians, they're working so hard, spending so much money, they actually think they're doing something good. Converting people from Hindus to Christians so that they can be bathed in the blood of Jesus. Instead, it's all blood religion, isn't it? They want to kill the cows and they say, I'm bathed in the blood of Jesus. What a horrible idea. What a nasty idea. So, this Vedic culture, it's not very easy to understand. I mean, about a generation ago, there was an identity crisis in Hinduism because Pandit Nehru was very influential, and he was against Hinduism. Here we're using Hinduism in a broad term. We're not promoting Hinduism, we're promoting Krishna consciousness, but Hinduism is the broader culture. We can say, in a broad way, we can say it's the broader culture in which Krishna consciousness operates. So he was promoting all this idea that we need science and this rational. We have to be rational. How can you believe in all these gods with four heads and elephant-headed god? How can you believe all this? So, practically speaking, the Hindu culture it was dying out among the more educated people. They just presumed that all this was stupid. And it was Prabhupada's movement that has restored the faith of Hindus in their own culture. That approximately, I don't know, sometime in the 1970s, the Illustrated Weekly of India, which was every educated Hindu read that. It front page had a picture of Omkar Prabhu, who was the head pujari at Krishna Balaram Mandir, who was from France, offering arati, and with the headline "Saviors of Hinduism." So people think these are just stories. What is this Lord Shiva? It's just some mythology. They use the word mythology. But Prabhupada was very insistent. This is not mythology. It's fact. You can't see it. You can't appreciate it. But that doesn't mean it's not a fact. The Shastra is not just some mythology. It's not easy to understand. That's true. It's not religion for children. I mean, people whose intellectual development is very poor. It's not such a thing, just like they say, believe in Jesus and you'll be saved. That's all. You just believe. You believe and you're saved. It's not such a simple thing. There's so many different complexities. There are many different rituals. But because no one was able to explain those rituals and explain that, yes, it is possible that there's a god with an elephant head. And Krishna's dancing with the gopis is not immoral. If you consider it immoral, you're immoral. Because there was no one to explain this, that people were losing their faith in all of these things. So, Prabhupada's movement has, as an indirect or anusangic fell as a secondary result of the propagation of pure Krishna consciousness. One of the results of Prabhupada's preaching has been to restore general Hindus' faith. But what that faith is very difficult to define. I mean, just like people, they have great faith in deity worship. There's so many people go for darshan at Tirumala. You know, now it's a computerized system. How to get darshan without having to wait in the line for 24 hours, 48 hours it used to be. Until recently, they made a computerized system. So many people are going. Why they're going, who they think or what they think Balaji is, they themselves don't know. But somehow they have faith that there's something good here. If you ask them who is God, what is God, everyone will give you a different opinion. And the opinion they give you one day, the next day they'll give you another one. They don't know what they're doing. But still they have some, due to some piety, they have faith in that. So, Prabhupada's this building temples, all the activities of ISKCON, they generate faith at the lokic level, at the popular level. But actually, to make people understand everything clearly, just like Achyamuni, he didn't understand who is God actually, even such a big personality, he didn't understand who is actually supreme. So, Prabhupada's mission, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, is not simply, it is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is Priti Vite Ache Jato Nagar Adi Gram Sabatra Pracha Hoibe Mor Naam. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name should be preached throughout every town and village. But, along with Gaur Naam, there has to be propagation of Gaur Dham and Gaur Kam. What is the holy abode of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? What is the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Proper philosophical understanding must accompany it. Otherwise, even just chanting Hare Krishna, if we don't clearly understand why we're doing what we're doing, then we won't actually get the benefit of chanting Hare Krishna. Therefore, as we see in the seven purposes of ISKCON, one of them is to systematically educate the people in general in the, I can't remember exactly the words, the proper values of life, so people can understand. The general piety is there in Vedic culture, Hindu culture, but that piety in and of itself is not sufficient to give love of Krishna or to take us out of this material world. And unless that piety is cultivated or brought further to the level of pure devotional service, then the tendency will be for that to become demoniac. Just like we say in the Mayavadis, they want cow protection, that's good. They have faith in Ganga, Govinda, but ultimately they say that everything is all one, so their piety is mixed with demoniac tendency. It's a strange mixture of piety and demonism. They'll have the pictures of all the gods in their homes, but yes, tu Narayanam Dev. What is that? Yes, tu Narayanam Devam Brahmarudradi Daivatai Samatvenaiva Vikshetha Sapashandiva Vidruvam. They have faith in all the gods, but Shastra says if one considers all the gods to be the same, as is in general Hinduism, then you're an atheist, an infidel. So this Hindu piety is there, and ISKCON to a large extent is bolstering that, but that is not in and of itself our aim and object. It's not simply a numbers game, how many people come to our temples and how much donation we collect and how much we get favorable publicity, but we have to see are people actually understanding the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, that we're not the body, we're eternal spirit soul, we're all part and parcel of Krishna, we're all servants of Krishna. Even Brahma and Shiva are servants of Krishna. We have to surrender to Krishna, giving up sense gratification. If Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, even at the expense of all my mutts, even if I had to give all up this, all this, so many centers he had established, even if I had to give all of that up, if by doing so I could get one pure devotee, I'd be satisfied. In other words, the purpose of all this activity is to make people pure devotees, without which it doesn't really serve any purpose, because there are already so many mutts and mandirs. So the purpose is pure devotional service. This should be clearly kept in mind. It's not... The success of the temple We can say in, on one level it's true that the success of the temple is if many people are coming, people are contributing, that's good. For neophyte devotees, that's good. They should come. But to keep people on the neophyte level is, what is the benefit? Acharyam eva hariye bhaktasya pujam ya shradhaya yate na tad bhakteshu chaneshu sabhakta prakrita sutta. One is called a prakrita bhakta, kanishta adhika, who Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we call them devotees. They're not really devotees, but we call them that just to kind of encourage them. But people who come to the temple with great faith in the deity, but they don't have faith in the devotees, then they're on the neophyte level. They say, yeah, well, they have faith. They like us, they bow down. But what that means, to have faith in the devotees, doesn't mean to say, yes, yes, Prabhuji, and give a donation. But faith means, real faith in the devotees begins when one comes to Shravana Dasha. One is ready to hear. One is ready to hear. And ready to hear what? Not what entertains us, but which purifies us. To hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and accept it. So, simply keeping people at the neophyte level and collecting many people, even if they're chanting 16 rounds and they're initiated and this and that, but unless they understand what they're doing and their goal is clearly to be a pure devotee and they're sincerely striving for that by following the rules and regulations of Vaishnava life and serving. Temples are meant to facilitate people's serving. So unless they're doing that, then simply on the basis of some shallow, mundane, good feeling or shallow so-called bhakti, if we collect many followers, then that is not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's purpose. Some thoughts for today, every day. Any questions? Comments? Yeah. Yeah, go on. Ask. Yeah, I know. That's why you put your hand up. I was asking for questions. You have a head also. You don't have to tell me.
In spite of this, Rani, Rani and Dandavat.
Pranamya, Dandavat.
Pranamya means obeisance, Dandavat means as a rod. Many times we use the word Dandavat in devotees. Without proper consciousness of what exactly it means and what the consciousness
means. Dandavat means like a rod. Yeah, that means falling down. That's supposed to symbolize considering oneself lower. That's the consciousness. It's a simple thing to understand. Maybe not such a simple thing to actually grasp in our hearts, but at least the theory is easy to understand.
How we understand it's practice
and not cultivate that consciousness. Do it, that's what it's for. What else do you want? Another of these how-to questions. It's all there, the process of Krishna consciousness is there. You're saying how to, that really means you think that the acharyas, they haven't given us the whole process? You haven't learned the basic principles of Krishna consciousness? Everything's there. Why do you think there's anything incomplete?
I tend to forget when I do the lecture. It is there and you have exactly.
What do you mean? When you're bowing down, you think you'd like to get up and kick him in the head?
No, Mahārāj. Prabhupada mentions like a rod in Krishna also, but Brahma gave obeisance to Krishna. Prabhupada writes that fell down like a golden rod. I don't exactly remember that word. But in the scriptures, when he
literally, dandava, it means the body is stretched out straight. It's an easy thing to understand, like I say, in theory. But we just have to remember that I'm supposed to be considering myself less. That's all.
What are the steps we can take? Because every people come to Krishna consciousness, as you mentioned, more being is more than the stage.
It should be a systematic education, as Prabhupada says, in the values of spiritual life. And that has to be imparted along with a service mood. The devotees have themselves to be in the mood of surrender to Krishna. Otherwise there's no hope. Otherwise it's a formality. Bhaktya sanjateya bhaktya. Bhakti comes from bhakti. If it's only, we can talk about systems, we do this, we do that, but unless the spirit of service is there, then it all becomes just a show. That should be the systematic education, engagement in service, education to, so that one can understand what is the difference between pure devotional service and general Hinduism. To take to Krishna consciousness means a big change in one's, not just giving up meat, or even if you're a vegetarian, you have to give up eating karmi bread and chips and what's that, potato crisps and all this kind of thing. But the whole consciousness, just like we see that, you know, often devotees, they're initiated, but still they're attached to doing some pujas, annual pujas for their family deities. And they have their ISKCON guru photo on their altar and their Kula guru photo also. It means they didn't really come into Krishna consciousness. For them it's a pious move, but not a move of surrender. So why we have to do that? If one understands, then automatically he'll do it. You don't have to tell. But that means that the philosophy has to be presented as given in Shastra itself and as given by the Acharyas, forcefully, insistently, not just academically, take it or leave it. If we have a take it or leave it approach, then everyone will leave it. They'll take what appeals to their sense gratification and leave the rest. So Shastra itself is very forceful in its presentation. Hare Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. His divine grace.